This is a Broad Pods production.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Danny Riley.
And I'm Dan Riley, and together we run Manor Made.
In this podcast, we have decided that we wanted to dive a little bit deeper into some of the things that mean more to us that we weren't able to share within the web series. We've got a little bit more time up our sleeves. We're going to have some killer guests in throughout the series, some amazing experts, and really talk about what's important to us on the journey to build our dream home. For Dan and I, building a home that was as sustainable as possible was our number one priority. So in each episode, we will also highlight these features as a standalone topic. We know that the most important part of a house is when it actually becomes your home. So in each episode of the pod, Dan and I will be giving you a sneak peek into these intimate spaces that made our house a home for us. Welcome to All Manner of Things, the podcast. As we know, this pod is an extension of the web series that we've created around the build of our Blairgowrie house. A big build it was. And in this episode today, we're going to touch on what a mammoth episode episode 8 is of the web series. So much going on, Dan.
Yeah, I think we've labelled episode 8 the big day. We had everything going on. We had water tanks getting delivered. We had the rendering happening internally. We had plumbers on site. The Sparky's fitting off. We had the joiners on site. The fireplace got delivered.
Yep.
And I had a plaster running around touching up some minor defect work. Plus, I got the pool base done.
And I decided that it would be a good day to have a big delivery of plants.
Why did you do that?
God knows.
And there's even a bit of, you're talking about painting. Yeah, there was a lot going on.
Yes, Dan, it was a huge day. And I feel like there's a collection of these big days in every project as all the finishing touches start to come together. As we said, the plastering, the painting, the rendering, all those bits and pieces. But for me, the biggest story is actually how the home is going to come together in terms of living, what the living environment is going to be like and how we're going to feel once we eventually move into the house. So that got me thinking about who would be the best person to speak to us about this. And today we are joined by Rath, who is a building biologist from Ecolibria. Now, thank you so much for joining us, Rath. We really appreciate your time today.
No worries.
Rath, I've got the big question straight off the top, mate. Explain to me, what is a building biologist? What do you actually do?
Yeah, so it's a question we get asked all the time. And to put it simply, we basically look at environmental triggers to illness in a building. So it encompasses a lot. We look at electromagnetic fields, you sleeping behind a meter box, as well as new chemicals that are off-gassing from all the new paints and carpets and things, as well as mold and moisture and so on. But there's so many different triggers in the environment. So building biologists look at the building as a whole and say, look, this could be an issue or this is how we could be healthier and so on, but also the impact of materials and the build on the environment. Uh-huh. So low impact on the environment and on the people living in there.
And Raf, is there a big shift in our industry right now that people are probably more going down this path than they ever have before?
Definitely. I mean, I've been doing this about 16 years now.
And wow.
Very quiet when I started.
I was going to say, funny enough, it was about 16 years ago.
It was a side hustle.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, in Europe, it's been around since 1971.
Hasn't everything really been around forever in Europe? They're smart, those Europeans.
It's a long time. But in Australia, probably I was amongst the first graduates, from the college here that's where you can study.
Mm.
And so, 16 years, it was very quiet. No one knew what a building purpose was. And still plenty of people don't.
Yeah.
But a lot more due and being requested in terms of we want a building biologist. We didn't even know what that was before.
What you've just said about from the college here. So I'm actually looking at studying this and mind blown about the limited offerings around studying this in Australia.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the college here that was set up by a very passionate lady, Nicole.
Yeah.
She's
been on Healthy Homes before as well, actually.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So she runs it and has done a great job in basically making that a better and better course over the years. It was only available in Germany, only in German. And so everyone was getting translations and doing whatever, but she developed something here and it's taken off to a degree.
Yeah.
So, Raph, for a client, is it simply the easiest way to put it? We hire a building biologist to make our lives healthier, live better? Is that how it is?
In the building,
Within the building that you're living in.
Within the building, that's exactly right. Yeah. So we want buildings to enhance your well-being as opposed to impact your health in some way. So instead of trying to minimise the impact on your health, we say, no, it should be more than that. Yeah. You should love going home. You should love the colours. You should love the lighting. You should love the feeling, the air, the everything in there. It's electrically quiet, and so it enhances your focus, your well-being, not just something where you go, oh, can we have slightly less chemicals or less mold?
And I think, you know, there's this misconception out there that people get sick or are unhealthy because of the outside environment. And I would argue that it is actually not true, and it is the environment that you are in the most that is most likely going to make you sick or affect your way of life.
Mm. That's exactly right. There are always, you know, caveats for that where you're living in a highly polluted area and so on.
Oh, exactly.
But most of the time, exactly right, the indoor air and the indoor environment is significantly more polluted and toxic.
7 to 10 times more polluted indoors than outdoors.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. It is a lot, which is why in this build, for example, I was so passionate and really pushed to have the ducted heating and cooling system that we have, which has a 4-stage air filtration system as part of it. So we have the opportunity to filter out pollutants and particles and smells and whatnot from the air to enhance what we're breathing in.
Yeah, so for a new home, I get it, you'd hire a building biologist, but Raph, for someone who's living in an existing home, can they still employ you to try and improve their living?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much you can do. You know, whether you're doing a big renovation or small renovation or not doing any reno at all and just go, look, what's wrong and how can we do little fixes? The mold and moisture, you know, we all go on about it all the time because it's such a big problem in Australian buildings. They just, a lot are not built that well to cope for that type of thing, or built too well and then not enough ventilation and they explode and the high energy stuff. So, yeah, there are things, simple things you can do, simple fixes, or buying certain products or supporting certain companies where they just have better product and so the indoor air quality will be better.
I remember growing up as a kid, it was the association I had to a clean home was the smell of bleach. Literally, a potentially cancer-causing product was what I associated with a clean home environment.
Yep. Yeah, that's bad.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. And what Raph just said then, I'm just thinking about when we owned an apartment. I just remember the condensation every morning that was going into the skirting boards and all of that. And that could be building up mold behind there. And we're breathing it in when we're sleeping.
Yeah, exactly. Mold just needs a lot of moisture. So if there's elevated moisture more than what's in balance, then you get issues. Basically, as a building biologist, maybe an easier way to explain is we look at nature as our standard. So rather looking at exposure standards, whatever, we look at nature and say, okay, what would the formaldehyde level be out there? What's the air quality out there apart from a polluted area? And say, what colours are out there? Why don't we have those colours inside?
You've actually just blown my mind. Nature is the actual benchmark.
Yeah, that's right. That's what building biologists look at and say, nature's our standard and how do we get as close to that as possible?
Wow.
There you go.
We're all screwed.
Yeah.
We have drifted a little bit.
How
do we bring the ocean into our home?
Treehouse on the beachside. That is where we need to be. That's so funny. Now, also, I have heard in the past, I can't remember if it was you who told me or not, when small children always have their runny noses and sick and whatnot, it's because of the dust mite and they're constantly kicking up, and that level of dust mite kicking up into the air when we're walking is generally the height of a small toddler, for example. So those, the dust mites and the allergens that are constantly in the air are at that height, and that's why there's always this constant idea of children have runny noses and coughs and colds and stuff like that, and the doctor always says they'll grow out of it because they physically will grow out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, there are a lot of allergens, but to a degree there's also a balance in that you don't want the home too clean.
Yep.
Because then there's a lot of good bacteria that's around that we do need to be exposed to when we're young and so on. But certainly the dust mites, as you say, that's not something we want elevated levels of. We have to live with them. They're essential.
Yep.
But you need to keep the levels normal, if you will, not elevated. And so you've got a lot more carpets and a lot more fabric stuff and therefore create a lot of more dust. Mm. Especially when we do air sampling, when we take an air sample and it lands on a slide and they look in the microscope, it's always skin cells that are dominant.
Well, that's what the dust mite feed on.
And they feed on that, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you look at it and you go, is there pollen, is there mold, is there all these things? But it's always skin cells that dominate that slide. And so whatever feeds all that. And they feed off that, so you want it. But if there's damp and moisture, those numbers just go up and then the allergens come and so on. And some people are just more susceptible than others.
There are things, though, like that we can do inside the home. If we're talking in retrospect, we're in a built home, we've lived in this home for a period of time, there are things that we can do to enhance that environment. So the things that I know of that I would love for you to add to, Raph, is definitely air purifiers in the home.
Is that in the AC system?
No, standalone air purifiers. Oh, you know how we used to have them in all of our own homes? We would have one in every second room. So, for example, companies are selling out now. It's so hard to come by good quality air purifiers that also have the HEPA filter in them, which is the hospital grade filtration component to it. So that's the big one that you need. Is that right? The HEPA?
Yes, exactly.
Or the HEPA grade?
So HEPA, hospital grade, you know, it sounds great. It's not that hard to get a sort of hospital grade HEPA, but you're exactly right. That's the best grade to have just because it gets the finer particles. Some people don't realize, I didn't realize before I studied, was that the tiny particles, not going too technical, but the micron size, which is minute, like you can't see it at all, under 10 micron is what dominantly makes up what's in the air.
Wow.
So the stuff you can see makes up a tiny portion of what's in the air. Like over sort of 90%, 98%. Is stuff that you're not going to see at all.
Yeah.
So the HEPA will block out, filter out those things. So just draw in the air, very simple technology really. I mean, it's just drawing in air. Mm. There's a filter there, blocks it out and blows cleaner air out the back.
Yeah.
So, but yes, if people don't ventilate as much, just your daily living is going to create mold and pollen and skin cells. And if those skin cells don't go out, then yes, all the dust mites come and so on and their allergens are in the air. So, yes, an air purifier could certainly help.
Is it a Band-Aid fix, though?
To a degree, probably.
To a degree, exactly. So if you're in a highly polluted area or a polluted area, it's good to have it.
Mm.
But, like, where you choose to live also is quite a big thing. So if you're in an area that has good air quality, you're near a forest or by the ocean and sea breezes coming off the ocean, then again we look at nature. We say, well, just open the window and let's get in that fresh air. Let's not get a man-made thing or human-made thing to change it in some way.
Yeah.
There's a big call for air purifiers because a lot of people don't have that luxury, don't live in those places.
And schools.
You need those air purifiers. And schools,
businesses, all of those types of things.
Exactly. That's where it's really helpful because you've got a lot of people in a closed space and you're drawing in air that's fairly polluted and it just keeps getting recycled a lot of the time if there's no outdoor air intake, and then, yes, the problems comes. Yeah, air purifiers are a good thing to have, generally speaking, if required, but not essential if you've got generally quite good air.
Because also think about the other things that you're doing inside the home. So you're contributing to the lived environment in the home through the chemicals that you're using. You're spraying deodorant, perfume, household cleaners that are laden with synthetic fragrance and other chemicals. All of that is going into the home's air and you're breathing that in. So it's going into your system. So if you're in an environment, as Raph said, that doesn't have the ability to have filtered air coming into the home or fresh air coming into the home, then that's where that can enhance, I guess, your living environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're right. All your choices you make, and that's why I say you don't have to do a reno, you don't have to have a new build. You just go, don't buy those products there. You don't need this massive range of cleaning product. Just a good microfiber, range of microfiber cloths, a good HEPA vacuum cleaner, that can take care of a lot. You just don't need all that stuff. Chemicals. It's not necessary. Just lift the contaminant off with the microfiber cloth, and it's gone. You've left a clean surface. When you spray, you leave a film on there. They have brighteners in and whatever, so you think it's shiny and looks nice, but it leaves a film on there and makes bacteria and other things a lot easier to adhere and come back more quickly.
Yep. Wow.
So you want a nice microfiber cloth that just removes it, leaves a dry surface, it'll come back a lot less.
It's pretty amazing.
Imagine if we got the education out there, all these companies would be
done. We're trying. But that's when I can now, because we've reduced the level of tox that we use in our home and chemical we use in our home, I am more hypersensitive when I smell it or come into contact with it. So, for example, I can smell different washing liquids and powders on other people's clothes.
Well, when we go to
I go into a home, I can smell their cleaners in their homes.
Smack you in the face.
It does smack you in the face, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We're finding people are more and more sensitized.
Yeah.
We don't know the exact reasons why, and it's usually a whole bunch of things. But there are so many more chemically sensitive people. There are so many more who get so much more autism, these other things we wouldn't link. But a lot of environmental stuff that we think is a contribution in terms of the environment. And that's what we're finding. If you're away from it, then yes, suddenly it's a hell of a strong, you know, softeners are probably, in my opinion, one of the most toxic things.
Oh my
gosh,
aren't they so bad?
So unnecessary.
So bad. It's such a, like a luxury thing. Have softer clothes.
Yeah,
well, actually, you don't really need that. Like,
you don't need it. And you can, vinegar is a very good softener, and it doesn't smell like vinegar if you just add a bit in there. And, you know, it's next to nothing in terms of cost. But those, when something has a fragrance, it's a very big mixture of chemicals to make up that fragrance.
Exactly
it could be
right.
hundreds of chemicals. It could be 10 or 20 or whatever, but you're breathing in a whole bunch of chemicals to just have a particular fragrance. And again, that's not nature. You know, nature, you want nature's fragrance, not stuff.
So during lockdown, I made Dan sit down and watch that documentary or that, I guess it's a documentary called Stink, where they, do you remember, Dan, where the small child was constantly getting sick and the smell, the off-gassing of the clothes that were coming from a certain store were overwhelming. And so then the parent went on this journey of understanding why do you have this, why is this packaged like this, why does this smell like it does, what are you putting on my toddler's clothes to smell like this when it comes out of the store or when I receive the parcel? And that was a mind-blowing thing to watch, to understand about fragrance and synthetic fragrance and what goes into it and how unnecessary it is. And if we bring it back to a new home, for example, and why I'm so passionate about Australian made, when we order anything from overseas, it has to be fumigated. Is it fumigated? Is that what they do? They treat it for whatever bugs or whatever environmental things they have going on. It will come, it will sit in your home. So think about a couch or a rug, for example, and it will off gas for like a minimum of 6 months. So whatever the actual chemicals are that have been used, they will continue to emit into your environment.
Wow.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And that varies. The more chemicals there are in there, obviously the more you'll have getting to your environment. And it's very similar to like smoke. Everyone knows when someone's smoking, it gets absorbed into everything and it smells for days. And if they've been smoking for a long time, you just can never get rid of the smells absorbed into stuff. And it's similar with the chemicals. We get sensitized people where they get these couches or whatever, a new home, and then they try and ventilate. And ventilating is the best thing you can do to just get all that chemical as it comes out to get it out. But, yes, sometimes it can take time. It off-gasses quicker when it's hotter. So some people will heat their homes or build specifically so that it's new around summer so that it off-gasses more in the heat and they don't have to close it up in winter and take that all in. And it happens more when it's humid. So if it's raining and there's a lot of moisture in the air, it off-gasses more, and then more when you have air passing over it, which is like ventilation. Those three things increase the off-gassing. But a lot comes, when you look at a product, you do your best. You look at what's called a safety data sheet for that product and they have to list the hazardous chemicals.
Yep.
But they don't have to list chemicals in there that are in very small proportions.
There's always a way around it, isn't there?
Proportion, but it's a small 1% or so too. But they can be chemicals that people are quite you know, susceptible to and have issues with. So that's an issue, and they don't have to give you details on treatments. Like you say, if they treat it with a pesticide for all the bugs, they treat it with flame retardants are a big issue.
Yep.
A lot of stuff's flame retardant treated. Mm. Those create issues. You won't see that in your safety data sheet.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So what are, I guess, the top three things that someone can do in a home that is established to enhance the living environment?
Yeah, it's a good question. It can vary depending on the location. Okay. Because some, you know, conduit can do.
Well, let's say problem areas right now are maybe the Sydney. East coast of Australia that are absolutely copping it with the rain and the wet at rain the moment. So what would be the key things for,
so
for
give
those?
Because there's a lot of confusion around mold, particularly in a place like that. And what do you do? It's just humid. Like, what do you do? People are too worried about opening their windows. So generally speaking, the answer to the question number one will be to open windows. If you're not in a highly polluted area near freeways and industry and all that, just open windows and get fresh air exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Just means the stale air goes out, new air comes in. We know a lot of sensitive people who just keep the windows closed because a lawnmower can set them off for anything, and just run air purifiers. And we found the air quality's not great.
Because you're kind of just constantly recycling existing air.
Exactly. You need an exchange of air to happen. Your air purifiers are great, but not 24/7 with the place completely closed.
Same way as a fan in the bathroom works. You need to have fresh air coming in for it to be able to extract.
The home needs to breathe. I think every hour it needs to breathe for 5 minutes. I think you're supposed to open it up and then let the air out and then close it back up, especially in winter.
Yeah.
I think it's 5 or 7 minutes per hour you're supposed to let the house breathe.
Yeah, as much as you can, full exchange rates,
For exchange rates. But for your thermal capacity too, it's only 5 or 7 minutes, I think, an hour. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, I don't know the exact number, but the amount of air exchanges per hour is usually what we talk about.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when you try and get it to be, as building biologists, you want as many as possible because you want that air coming
fresh
in.
Air
you want
all the time.
Going out all the time. But with
Melbourne winter,
but we have energy efficient homes and there's a massive problem at the moment. Like if that's one thing you get out from this, it's like building really energy efficiently is great and sort of agree with it. We need to control things for energy.
However.
But you must ventilate.
Yes.
If they don't put in what I think should be standard are heat recovery ventilation systems.
Mm-hmm.
Very common in Europe for 50 years or less. But here you speak about it and they go, wow, that sounds amazing. And it's not. It's actually old technology. But it allows you to exchange air. So it pulls the air out of wet areas 24/7. So you will get the kitchen, the laundry, and the bathrooms all extracting.
Mm-hmm.
But not like when you turn an extractor fan on. You can't hear it. It's just very gentle. Mm. You have to put your hand up there to see, yes, it is extracting. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't create these drafts and things like that. Fresh air comes in everywhere else from outside, but there's a heat exchanger there in between. So it just means that all that extraction that happens, the dust mite allergens and the water vapor and all that stuff's going out, mold, and what comes in from outside, the heat is actually retained from the outgoing air through a heat exchanger.
Wow.
So when you do get the colder air, it transfers the heat to that fresh outdoor air, and you have a much nicer environment inside without heating at all.
Wow.
So it's not a heating system, but the way when you shower, you create a lot of heat. When you're cooking, exercising, breathing, it's
just
warm
having
breath.
Bodies in the home. Mm. Yeah.
Bodies in the home. So there's a lot of heat generated, and this just helps you not lose that heat, but dump out all the stale air.
Okay, so we've got opening windows.
Opening windows.
We've got the heat exchange system.
This is the first I heard about heat exchange. I'm intrigued.
Yeah,
very heat recovery. That.
Heat recovery ventilation. Like, we go, how's it for everyone? It's like first time hearing it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so common and old, actually.
Old,
but it's so new in Australia. It's
I'm
not
write
as
that
efficient.
Down, get into selling these in Australia.
But your house has to be very well insulated for it to be effective.
Okay.
If you put an existing home, It's working great. You're expecting too much. Yeah. You know, all the cold's coming in through all gaps and cracks. This is not going to be effective.
So we've crossed over then. So I guess we've got what could work in then a newly built home and an old home. What would be the third thing that anyone could do in any home environment, whether it be established or being built, that you would really push for?
I think two things. One is taking your shoes off when you come in before the home, because people don't, they sort of forget when you've walked around. You may have gone into public toilets, you may have gone into, you're on the road, you've gone into golf courses, you've gone into, you've walked through all sorts of pesticides and all sorts of nonsense on the ground.
I never thought of it in terms
of that. And if you just take your shoes off, you just stop all that from coming in. So having a nice little room like mud rooms, you know, where you come in and whatever, or if you, even if you don't, just a little rack or something.
Yep.
Not every single shoe, you can take your shoes off and then just put it in inside where you put your shoes. But walking around with all that, you can cut down on a massive load of stuff by just doing that.
That's amazing.
Really simple thing. That one. And
you can see why I come home at the end of every Healthy Home shoot and I'm like, oh my gosh, Raph was there today and I learned this and I learned that.
Yeah, it's simple. That'll stop all the stuff, a lot of stuff from coming in that's been dragged in everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And then just the products you buy.
Yes.
Just being more mindful and going, if something's called an air freshener, it's an air freshener is if you open a window, not if you get this conglomerate of chemicals
if you're bringing
sprayed into the air.
If you're bringing a fake smell into the home, it is not good for you.
Yeah, and those cleaning products, like we said before, the microfiber, cut down the cleaning products,
okay,
well ventilated and shoes off at the door. Those few things will cut down enormously on stuff. There's obviously a whole bunch of more, but those three will do a lot.
Amazing. So I just want to have a quick conversation about the things that we did, for example, and I did consult with you at one point during our project about the adhesive we used on our floorboards, for example.
Because we had hydronic heating below it.
We did. So there was going to be, you know, this heat reacting with whatever was there. And Dan was like, we're using this. And I'm like, no, we've gone to so much trouble in doing these things. And then so I contacted you, Raph, and you actually said, no, that's actually the perfect thing to use. That's the best product you could use. Yep. So for us, we went with the known lowest VOC paint available in Australia for the paint on our walls. We used
just on that, like to the people out there, how can paint affect me?
Yeah, so paint's probably one of the biggest indoor pollutants because it's painted on all the surfaces, generally walls and ceilings. There's just such a massive mix of chemicals that goes into paint. So the off-gassing from that is enormous.
Yeah.
It can be confusing because sometimes odor suppressants can be put into paint, so they are low VOC. You don't smell that VOC, but they're not technically low in the chemicals that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, but that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of court cases going on in America about this VOC
and
low and low VOC because the labeling is very confusing in what you can call low. Every single product has a different category of what it's regarded as low. So if we say that 8 grams of VOC per litre in a caulking is acceptable, but in paint only 3 is or whatever. Those aren't the correct numbers, but what I'm saying is every product has a certain level that's been industry decided upon and government, whatever, to try and say, okay, that's about as low as we can get, you know, and so that's low. But to some people, that's not low.
Yeah.
So it's confusing, the VOC thing. And a lot of the time when they say no VOC, it's in the base. So when you buy that big white base,
of course,
that's no VOC but does not include the pigments because they don't know what color you're doing. So the darker the colors, the higher the VOC content.
Ah.
And the lighter the colors, the lower the content. So that low white base is good. That's why white pints don't have a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But the darker you go, then the higher the content. So finding a company that has their own pigment system, that basically the pigments are also no or low VOC.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite important because everything changes once you start squeezing in your colours.
That is a nugget. So do your research around not only paints and the bases, but the actual pigments that are going in to mix those. Okay, cool. So we've also used a little lime render in the home, which we know helps the home environment breathe as well and purifies the home's air. We elected to put floorboards, engineered floorboards down, made by Story specifically, which we did a lot of research into their sustainability practices and the formaldehydes and whatnot that are go into those. There's no added formaldehydes in that. The insulation, for example, that we put into the walls as well. The heating and cooling system, as I said, with its air filtration. So those things that we were able to do for the living environment to help it breathe and help our experience, I guess. But the one thing, Raf, that I really wanted to just get a quick overview on, which you touched on earlier, was EMFs, because I feel like this is something that people are, I think it's the next thing that people are going to be really mindful
of. Explain what an EMF is too.
Electromagnetic field.
Yep.
So what is this and how is it going to affect someone in the average home, for example?
So EMFs, it's a big one.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. And we've been called in a lot more for EMF and we find that there are a lot more what we believe adverse health effects affecting people in indoor buildings because of it. Mainly it's because of the proliferation of wireless, because it's convenient and it's really nice. You can just talk and say, play the song and do this and whatever. And you can be somewhere else and see what's going on at your house and so on. But I personally believe we're paying quite a big price for that in terms of our exposure. So younger kids are a lot more susceptible because their skulls are much thinner, a lot more chromosomal change taking place.
So when someone is nursing a small baby and they have their mobile phone next to that baby's brain.
Yeah. For us, that's a real problem. And the problem is that from a certain generation, they've been exposed from in utero. Mm. So there's laptops on pregnant bellies, it's all wirelessly done and on the phone, and that's all very close. And so from when they conceived, haven't even come into the world yet, there's a lot of exposure. And then their baby monitors put on. We're finding, you know, if I can say a short story about the baby monitors, because there was one particular case where a lady put her baby down the cot, always when she came in the morning, found that it was on the other end of the cot, just always moved to the one end, just curious why. So when we came in, didn't know anything about this, but did an audit and said, look, this baby monitor, just try to take that away. It's a very high field and it's on all the time, regardless of whether the noise is on and you're hearing it. So she did it and then she called us in tears the next day and said, I took that away, the baby monitor, and in the morning my baby was where I put it in the cot. It was moving away from the baby
goosebumps.
Monitor.
Wow.
Yeah, so it you can basically, when you're a child and like, a canary when you're a baby, you don't have all of that in you yet, all the toxins and chemicals. Mm. Well, you know, some goes through breast milk and so
we
on.
We have no chemical
generally,
load.
Generally, yeah, you do have a chemical load, and unfortunately in babies it's getting higher and higher.
Because of what we are consuming.
Because what we're consuming, pass on to them. In fact, you can often tell how contaminated a population is by testing breast milk. Because a lot of chemicals get deposited into adipose tissue and fat tissue. And then the breast milk, a lot of the babies then get the breast milk, which is the best thing you can possibly give. But there's a lot of chemicals in that for whatever if you've had that load. If you haven't had the load, then it's not. So it's one thing. But yeah, going back to EMFs, not sleeping behind meter boxes is probably the biggest thing. In Australia, having meter boxes behind bedheads is quite ridiculous.
Yep.
So when we design homes, we say just put it onto the street next to the post box, whatever. That's where your meter goes.
Yep.
You can have a switchboard or something up there, but run the mains on the garage side and then go from there, rather than everything on a bedhead.
Tick for us.
Yeah,
great. Because if you pull that plasterboard wall off
where
you put your bed up against and you saw everything there, you wouldn't put it up against it.
Yeah.
You don't see that. You just see a plasterboard painted wall. It creates all sorts of issues, in my opinion. So that's one thing you can avoid, and trying to cable in as much as you can.
Yes, so. We are definitely a wireless world now. And it was something that I was very mindful of with our particular project. It is wireless, but was on my mind a lot.
And it's a hard thing because it's a lifestyle thing.
Exactly.
It's not just a choice, like your whole lifestyle changes if you go wireless or cable. So for us, for example, to give an idea of how we can possibly get around it. So I have twin boys. They're nine, identical twin boys. They're nine now. So we don't have the teenagers and all that happening yet, which is the trickiest with mobile phones and connecting to friends and so on. But basically we say, look, don't walk around. They don't have phones and tablets yet, but we don't allow walking around on phones and tablets.
Okay.
So you say, if you want to look up something on the internet, there's your computer. Everything's cabled in using Cat 6A cables, so it's shielded Ethernet cable and so on.
Yep.
Everything's cabled in. Everyone's got a computer. Everyone has fast internet. Don't sit on the couch and browse on a tablet. Just get up and go and sit on there and look up stuff you want to, and then come and chat to us when you're on the couch or when you're doing something else. Not everyone with heads down and doing their thing because
we
we're not connecting.
We are failing at life, Dan. we don't have chemicals in the home, but...
But that's just one way of doing it. So we're saying there's your area. Be on the internet as much as you like. Connect and do whatever you want, but that's the way to do it. So if you can connect more, stay away from the meter boxes. Power lines, just be aware there are little substations and power lines. If they're underground, it's a lot better.
Yeah.
If they're above ground and you build a double story, that can affect you a lot more because you're just physically closer to that line and that can cause issues in time. Phone towers, very different to control. They're popping up like mushrooms everywhere on every lamppost and so on. Yeah. So it's difficult, but yes, those are it's a major issue, but not an easy one to fix because everything's going the wireless way, not the other way.
Mm. It's fascinating. I think we could do a full series on this.
I could talk to you all day, Raph, and I'm always getting told off when I shoot about talking to you too much. Thank you so much for coming in. We could seriously do an entire podcast series on building biology. That was amazing. I learnt more today.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Before we go, Raph, I just wanted to ask you one question. We kind of do a little bit of a sustainability or a cool scenario type theme with our guests. And I wanted to understand if there's what's been the most exciting from either a sustainability standpoint or the difference that you've been able to make to someone's life in your business.
Oof, yeah.
That's a big on one. The spot.
You know, everyone wants to get a story that's a whole new build. And there are lots of those where the whole new build and the family feels fantastic and so on. But really, to be honest, from a sustainability point of view, from a health point of view, that's different. You make very big changes to people by just moving them away from a meter box or whatever. I deal with a lot of tears, unfortunately. So tears of joy and depressive stuff. But yes, you can make a huge difference in someone's life by doing these things health-wise. In terms of sustainability, I think one of the biggest differences is being involved on a commercial level because there have been a lot of changes in the industry where you have to now have E0 or E1 apply, for example, or their MDFs and so on. You used to have to pay a lot to do that.
Yep.
And that's because of all the awareness and what we keep talking about in terms of chemicals. Not just us, it's all sorts of people. But to be honest, I think that's the best thing because people won't make the decisions themselves. But if that's all they've got to purchase, then that's fantastic. So we need to work on a level where you're going, no, these are the materials.
The baseline things are the best for you.
Mm.
Exactly right. That's, I know you wanted a whole story. I don't have a big story. There were too many. I don't know which one to choose.
Perfect.
But in terms of saying, work on that level.
Yep.
And the more we do it, the more cases, we had a mattress, for example, where someone reacted and just their lips blew up and face and their kid and she was distraught and so on. We went and tested very high formaldehyde levels. They were from overseas that came in. And when we test the levels, they were enormous.
Wow.
And they were mold affected. There was water on the container ship and so on.
Perfect storm.
But changing that meant that the company actually had no idea that it was a problem. And it sells an enormous amount of mattresses in Australia. And they had no idea. And basically when they found out, they said, right, they stopped all orders. They said they're already a lot on the water, obviously, and we got them in warehouses, but they let those off gas. They let the ones come. They let them off gas, and then they stopped, and then they demanded a formaldehyde-free mattress manufacturer that they got certificates. And so from then on, all these mattresses that people are going on buying wouldn't have a clue. They sell a lot at big stores, and they now don't have the formaldehyde. So if there's a big story, that's maybe one of them, but it's on that same level.
You are changing the world.
Yeah.
Changing
only,
how
only,
people
only,
live.
Only a little bit, only one. These things help. What you do helps a lot.
Yeah.
Education.
It's got to education, educate. Exactly. Mm. Helping the world one less formaldehyde mattress at a time.
That's right.
Raf, thank you so, so much for coming in today. That was just brilliant. Thanks again for joining us on All Manner of Things. We'll see you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.